Hi, I'm Abigail, and I'm addicted to money. So for the next 50 seconds, I'd like to feel dirty, inconsiderate, manipulative, and ashamed. I apparently agreed to play the game of life by the rules made by the rich in order to make them more rich. And because I feel powerless and out of control, I am asking you to listen to this ad for Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your computer or phone. Anchor will distribute your podcast wherever you can get podcasts. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And everything you need to make a podcast is in one place. So download Anchor for free on the app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So yeah, that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host, and this is part two of our relationship with depression featuring Dee, local neighborhood baby from the Stressed, Depressed, and Anxious podcast. So this is part two. I hope you guys enjoy.
No, totally.
I had that one experience. You guys, I had that one experience, and like, I would never want to go back in to it for obvious reasons. I don't want to get to that point where I even needed that. But like, also, like, if I did need it, like, I really would be so reluctant to ever even go there. Mm-hmm. And I see memes all the time, like mental health memes. I see memes all the time about, like, you know, your therapist telling you, like, oh yeah, you know, you should go, or you should you know, they having those little like strongly worded conversations.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, or whatever. And you know, like the fear behind that. Like I see a lot of like memes about it, and it's just, I'm like, I can't, yeah, it's so true. Like you don't wanna, no. It's one of those things like feeling like you wanna tell your therapist all of your feelings that you've been having, but you don't want to tell them because you'll be committed. Like
Oh, you know? Yeah. Well, it's almost a deterrent. For some, you know, in some ways where it's just like, yeah, but if I tell you this, like, are you going to take it in such a way that, you know, you're going to be like, oh, well, I think it's time. You know where we need to send you.
Yeah. And to scare people from going to the therapist, but it is a possibility. Like if you go and you start talking about the fact that for weeks, like you've been wanting to kill yourself, and they start asking you those questions, like, okay, have you been feeling that recently? Like, do you feel like you might kill yourself? And you think you're having this conversation where you're just being open, but it could result in like, yeah, mm-hmm. them being like, okay, well, stay here. And, yeah. you know, you being committed. And, you know, that is something that like, again, like you may need the help or you may not necessarily need that level of help, but it's really hard. There's so many shades when it comes to mental mm-hmm. health. And I think it's a field that's still kind of like evolving and trying to improve itself. And like you said earlier, it's like, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of room to grow in that area. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough to really, get the help that you need all the time.
Oh yeah. Well, and like you said, because it's so stigmatized, or, you know, it's sort of the, like the brunt of jokes, mm-hmm. you know, or it's the, you know, you're the problem child, you're the issue. It can just be a deterrent, and it can add to that sort of like paradoxical, like spiral thinking of just like, well, if, you know, I'm going to therapy and I know I'm supposed to talk to my therapist about this, but you know, if I tell them, then I can't, you know, if I tell them I'm going to kill myself or I'm feeling like I'm going to kill myself, then, you know, then they're going to, you know, push a button and I'm going to be, you know, down a tube into the, you know, crazy people place. And I don't, you know, I can't do that, or I can't afford to do that. I can't afford to take a week off work to, you know, to go take care of myself.
And the thing is, there's so many shades, like I said. You know, if you wanted to ask me honestly, truthfully, how many times do you think about killing yourself? Like, you know, I could tell you every single day, realistically. Mm-hmm. Like, I think about that stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. However, you know, in hearing that, you might be like, oh my God, you need serious help. But that's just something that like crosses my mind every single day, because that's part of like the struggles that I have with mental health. Doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that I kind of know when I get to a place where it's like, or I'm getting to a place where it's like mm-hmm. going to become like very serious. But just in general, I think about that stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to tell a therapist that, that might be like a trigger for them to be like, oh my God, like, you know.
Right. Well, and that sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, like it's not only is it shades of gray, but it also depends on the therapist. Mm-hmm. So if you live in one town and you've been seeing this one person, just because everything you told that one therapist doesn't mean that if you move and find another therapist in another town, that the rule, like those shades of gray are going to be the same. So, you know, it truly almost is that personal. Like, you know, just because you told one therapist one thing doesn't mean that the next therapist that you find that you click with is going to find those same things funny, or they're going to, you know, find those same things like, you know, as serious or not as serious, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it's, you know, it's crazy how personal it actually really, really is. I think it's like the value that people to compare to something tangible for people who are not experiencing mental health, or they don't have mental health issues. Like if you're going to a doctor and you've been going to this doctor, like your full adult life, you know, that doctor has a much better idea about your habits. No matter what you say, they have a much better idea of your habits, who you are, how your daily life is. They know your medical history almost intimately. They can recommend things based on, you know, the things that they really know personally about you, because you guys have that established relationship, and it helps them to be a better doctor to you. And that's why in the medical field, people recommend so much for you to have a primary care doctor, because they want you to have somebody that you regularly go to, and that person will be better able to determine what you need versus like just somebody that you're seeing because you went to the emergency room, you know? So it's the same thing with a therapist. If you have a therapist and you've been going to them for years, the value there is astronomical. They know you better, you know, they can determine the nuances of what you're saying. They can tell when something has gone seriously wrong versus when you're just being, you know, yourself that you know regularly, and things happen. You end up having to switch them. You end up, your shirt doesn't cover it anymore. Like, you know, things change. And unfortunately, like you said, you know, you have to go through that whole thing again. And I think to compare it, like even when you go to the doctor, one of the things that I find really annoying, especially if you've been to like a hospital emergency room or something like that, and you've had like a medical issue, you'll tell a nurse something. They'll leave the room, and then another nurse will come in and ask you to repeat the same thing. And then they leave the room, and then the doctor comes in and they ask you the same thing. And then, you know, they leave the room, and then somebody else.
Yeah, but then the technician comes in, and then you have to explain to the technician. And then, you know, and then the like, janitor comes in and wants to know your life story.
And it's like, do you guys even talk to each other? And that's how it feels. It's like restarting all over again. Even like a romantic relationship. It's like you get to know this person. You guys were together for 7 years, and then you have restart all over again. And it feels so daunting. And like you have to start from the beginning. And it's just so, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's a very long haul process. And, you know, God help you if you move. If you have to move, or if they move, or if, you know, some horrible thing happens and they're not able to practice anymore, then, I mean, it's a million different things happen, and it's a long haul thing. It's a work in progress through your entire life. And that can be daunting, I think, to a lot of people. It gets me sometimes where I'm like, fuck, this is like forever.
Yeah. And even like, and by the way, they're people, you know, and I think like it's important to say that, because like, you know, it's funny to compare it. Okay. So like growing up in a lot of my earlier adult life, like I obviously know that doctors are people, they're human beings. Right. But like, a sense of like, you know, they're almost separate. They're almost like godlike in a sense, because you don't really think of them as human beings. You know, I don't know a better way to explain that, but it's just like you think of a doctor as a doctor, you know, that they know everything. They should know everything. They don't have any like real serious questions. They can figure it out. They can help you. You don't really look at them as somebody who can make a mistake, or somebody who won't know something or whatever. And, you know, that's just a comforting way to look at it. But I remember when I started to watch Grey's Anatomy, that I started to realize, like, yes, like doctors are seriously people. Like that's an example. Like some of you guys might roll your eyes at, but it's absolutely true. Like I was like, oh my God, like you can make a mistake. you can misdiagnose somebody. You can, mm-hmm. you know, forget something. That's why there's these lawsuits and all these malpractice things. Like you can, you know, not, some of them can be better. Some of them can be worse. Some of them can be just starting out and some of them can have, you know, 47 years of experience and it makes a mm-hmm. difference in your care. And that's the same thing for a mental health professional. They are people. And I remember like a comparable experience was like around that time where, you know, before I went to, you know, before I volunteered to go in to that mental health hospital, that particular therapist, I remember one of the things that she would always do is like, she would always cancel on me, you know, something would always come up and she would cancel on me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the, you know, some of the issues that I was having was like major trust issues, which I still have like major trust issues with people. Yeah. I find that it's like, almost like, it's like every time that somebody says like, I'll be here for you, or like, like, I'll be here for you. Like, if you say that to me, I'm like, I already know that these are like the famous last words. Like, you will not
exactly.
Be-
yeah. You know it's the, it's the famous last words. It's always, I've had that experience too. It's the, you know, yeah, we're, I'm always here for you. Yeah. Well, cause I, it, in me, in my life, I've had that and it's kind of more, people will say that to me and I'm like, yeah, well, we'll see if when you're here, when it counts, because most of the time, people are like, oh man, I can't. uh-huh. So let's see if you're here when it counts.
Yeah. These are like cursed words for me in my life. Like literally anytime somebody says that phrase, it's like, okay, like I already know I can just count this out. Like you're not going to be here for me. So she was one of
the lowest expectations.
Yeah. She was one of those people that was saying that to me. And I was just like, yeah. And then, you know, she can't end up canceling like left and right. Like, okay, this came up, so I have to cancel whatever. And nothing, it's nothing on, like, really on her. You know, I get it. Like, life happens. She's a human being. But also at the same time, like, it's even more of a big deal when you, unfortunately, are a mental health professional because it's, like, everything that you do is affecting your patient. Like, you don't, you, I mean, it's really tough to deal with. Like, it really is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I have a lot of people, just like in my family that are mental health professionals in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, because I guess my experience is slightly different because I do have a lot of people in my family that are in the mental health profession. They were never really divine, I guess, in my like mind. Like there was not this idea of like, well, they can do no wrong, because it was like, well, actually, I mean, you know, I know somebody, you know, and they're definitely not perfect or whatever, you know, but I feel like on the whole, that's kind of just, that's true for most people. I think that most people hold mental health professionals in some sort of higher regard on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to remember sometimes that, you know, yeah, they're people too. They have families, they have life happens to them as well. I do think though, that if you become a, like, if you become a health professional and you specifically go into the field of mental health, there does need to be some sort of like, I don't know, some sort of like reality check by somebody going, hey, so you know that like, if you're signing up to do this thing in mental health, you're signing up to be a therapist, you're signing up to be a psychiatrist, just know that these are probably not the best people to like cancel on a lot, or, you know, something, I don't know. It's probably not even realistic with that, that would happen, but I just feel like there doesn't need to be this sort of extra layer of something.
It's true. It's like the doctors where they take the oath and stuff. Like, I mean, again, human beings say that they'll do something and things come up and things happen and they're people, you know, and some people are better at something than other people. You know what I mean? And it's just, you can't tell somebody that they're, oh, you're too unreliable, you can't have this job. You won't figure it out until they've actually started working in the first place. So like, it's really hard, but
yeah,
it does make sense because it's like, as a person, it's almost like the thing that I used to say about teachers. And I said that a lot. It was like, dude, like I've heard so many teachers say that they don't like children growing up. And it's like, this is like a criteria of this job that you should like children if you are going to become a teacher.
Right.
You know, if you're teaching, especially age kids, like high school kids, you're like, I hate students. You know, I hate the kids. Right.
Like, why are you like, what did you, what part of this is not living up to your expectations? Right. I don't know.
And it's not like a job that like you're doing like blindly, like you didn't know what it was going to be like. You actually have been a student before. So you kind of, you know what you're getting yourself into, but like, okay. You know what I mean? And it's like those, even nurses, even doctors, like, you know, they have no bedside manner. They don't really have the emotional capacity to really care about people. They just kind of do the job because maybe they like the title or maybe it's just lucrative or whatever. And it's like, these are positions and roles that you play that you definitely, beyond the financial thing, beyond like, you know, the glory that you can get from saying that you're this kind of person or this is your career, you should really care about people and want to do right by them, you know, and have the capacity to do right by them, you know, in terms of what you're doing. So it's just like, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I agree.
I don't know. It just is one of those things to me where it's like, yeah, these are just like you. Yeah, you have to like, what do you mean you don't like children? So why are you here? Like, what are you doing?
You had one job.
What part of this seemed like a good idea? Like, yeah. I don't understand. But yeah. And I get that, like, for mental health. And yeah, I guess, you know, you really can't tell people, like, you can't have this job. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, understand that if you decide, if you choose to study something in the mental health, like, branch of medicine, like, be aware that, like, you are signing up to deal with, you know, mentally unstable people sometime, or, you know, like people who are going to be really depressed, people that are have anger issues, you know, or whatever the thing is. Like, these are the people you're signing up to like work with. So yeah, you should probably, I don't know, like have compassion or empathy or something. I don't know. If you're like a psychopath, go into politics, but like don't come here. We don't want you over here. We
don't need you here.
Right. This is not your area. And that's fine. I'm not judging it. I'm just saying, like, this might not be for you.
Yeah. Do something that resonates with you. If you're gonna go into, you know, do the work, all the college courses that you need to take and pay for. I mean, do something that resonates with you.
Yeah, I don't think that we talk about that enough, though, too, is like but I'm also of the thinking, this is, I guess, sort of off topic, that I think it's insane that we expect 17 and 18 year olds to know what they're doing for the rest of their lives. So,
so true. Okay. It's so true.
Insane.
They think that you're too young for a million different things. But the minute that you suddenly become 17 or 18 and you graduate, you're old enough now to know exactly what you want to do with your life. Are you kidding me? Like, what?
Like, I can't drink and I can't have a tattoo and I can't smoke cigarettes, but I can sign this piece of paper for that says I owe you $60,000 to study God knows what.
It's just so unethical. Like, or it should be illegal. I think, like, you're saying that I can't drink and I can't, you know, smoke because I don't have the capacity to make the proper decisions because my brain is not fully developed. Right.
But also, I'm not old enough to drink or smoke cigarettes or, you know, get a tattoo, but I can sign up to go to war. You know, you don't necessarily have to sign up to like go, you know, go to college or whatever. Like you can sign, they'll make you sign your life away. They'll let you do it at 17 or 18. Like, I'm pretty sure all you have to do is show that you graduated from high school or whatever.
No, by the way, I was going to do that. Just as an FYI, I remember, you know, growing up, I just like I had a love for all things military, and I was in ROTC in high school for a little bit, and I just had,
I was
like,
never brave enough.
I enjoyed it. I used to like go camping as a kid, and like I learned all these things, and like I was just like, I was pretty much like an avid survivalist. I love those things. And then, you know, in high school, like I had a year where, you know, I was like in ROTC or something like that. And I just had such a, I was very patriotic at that time for whatever reason. And not that anything is wrong with that. And I remember taking my ABSVAB, I think is what it's called, and I did like I had a really, really high score. So like recruiters were calling my house all the time. And I was just like, I really want to do something, you know, whether it is signing up for the military or whether it's going into the, you know, police work and be a police officer or, you know, like I wanted to be something within that realm, like whether it's being like a homicide detective or all that kind of stuff interested me. And I was like, you know what? College is expensive. Like, I think, you know, me going to the military, like I have a love for it. I would love to do it. I'd love to sign up. My parents were like, hell to no, you absolutely are not doing that. This is wartime. Like, you definitely are not going anywhere. And I was like, what? And they're like, no, 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 and no. So like, they didn't let me do that. I oftentimes wonder like where I would be if they did let me do it.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, listen, I have issues with that, with, you know, troops in general, because it's like, again, you can sign up to sign your life away when you're 18 or 17 or whatever it is to go into the military. And then you can go fight for us or do whatever we tell you to do, I guess, for however long you sign up for. But once you're back, man, good luck. I mean, we're not taking care. No, mental health. I guess go to the VA, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. We might have something.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it's like that. It's like that with a lot of things, by the way. With a lot of things. Even with prison, you know.
Because
the thing that people don't realize in those situations is that mentally, whether or not you had mental health problems in the first, like whether, let's just say you don't even get, you don't even have PTSD or whatever, they reshape the way that you think, right? Because you're not lived, like society shapes the way that everybody thinks, right? Like, because we're living in this day-to-day life, there are certain things that are normal for us because they're like, this is acceptable, like, you know, in society, and this is not acceptable. Like, we live by a certain set of rules. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the military, it removes you from this society and brings you into another one with what's acceptable and what's not. And they reshape your thinking so that you can like say, okay, this is what, you know, I'm supposed to be doing. This is how we operate. This is our rules. Even our court systems are different. It's like you're in, it's like a sub-government that you're in and you're thinking different. And then they're asking you to just come back and like throw you back into like a society and asking you to just re-enter it. And it's like you come from a different type of thinking. And so even that in and of itself is like super confusing and like really hard to deal with. And same thing with prison. You know, people talk about prison reform all the time. I think like rehabilitation, that's a huge problem. It's like you're in this sub-society. There's all these, they take you out. I mean, you know, you put yourself in, but like you get out of this society that we're all living in and you get thrown into this other one with its own set of rules, its own set of like everything. Everything there is different. Like you learn it, you live by it, you become, this is your habit, this is how you deal. It even has a different currency, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you get out and they're just like, okay, you know, throwing you back into this one. It's like, no, I don't know how to live like this anymore. I need help. Like, I don't know.
I've heard it described as like it's probably the closest thing to like being abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
Like that's, and I was like, that's a really good, I don't remember where I heard it, but like that's a really good description because it's like, yeah, that, if I were to, if you were to imagine what it would be like to be abducted by aliens and then to be like beamed back, it's probably pretty close to either, you know, going into the military or going to prison, you know.
Like not even briefly. Like, for crazy long enough to form habits, long enough to change the way that you think, change the way that you operate, change the way that you move or the way that you perceive people, everything
yourself
about
yourself or perceive yourself. I mean, any, you know,
it's just crazy. I read, by the way, because you were talking about like alien abduction. I actually like, or it being like that, I read and I was like, it made me cry because I was like, I think I was on some site or whatever. And I was just reading these things where like, they were asking people like, what's the strangest thing? Like you got out of, these people got out of jail after like 25 years or something like that.
Right, right.
Like what's like the thing that's like most shocking to you? And it was eye opening to realize that like, oh, you know, I didn't know what a cell, like I didn't understand like the cell phone. I didn't know that you could like.
What's the internet? What is that?
Like, right. Like all these different things that like are such like it's like so normal to you that it's like, oh my God, they felt like they were living in like a weird movie, you know, like they felt like how people would feel if they were like flying cars. You know what I mean? Like it was just it's insane to them. And it's like, wow, you know?
Right.
Like it makes you realize that like how different it is when you just go in and you're there for 25 years or something like that. And
right. Because I mean,
go back out there and figure it out.
Get out. Good luck. Get out.
And then they think you're not going to want to go back in. I think sometimes you don't even realize, like, you know, we talk about people going back into jail because, like, maybe they don't have, like,
yeah, repeat offenders or whatever it is, you know.
But, like, it's sometimes not even about if you're able to get a job. Sometimes it's just the fact that, like, it's so, like, you don't know how to operate here. And you should
right.
go where you know how to operate.
Yeah. You know? What? I completely get that. It's the, yeah. Well, and that, again, you can re-up your Army contract.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah, I don't know. I could be wrong.
You can. Are you kidding? Like, unless you are, you know, dishonorably discharged or something. Or you know, you had some like thing that happened where you're injured. But like, you definitely have the option to re-up. And sometimes people make a career out of it, you know, because they love it. And sometimes people make a career out of it because like, this just doesn't even seem like something they can do anymore. They feel like they're not at home because that becomes their like, their norm now, and they want to stick with that because they don't know how to operate here. And it's just like going back to our original topic, it's hard to like, because that's so broad too, but like to narrow it down into like mental health issues that you have, like a lot of times I think like the biggest feeling and what inspired me to start my own podcast is like the feeling of just being alone. Like I feel like I'm so different, like in the room of just like normal people, you know, that don't have mental health issues, I guess, you know.
Oh, no, you're not alone.
They tell you you're not alone, and it always feels good to be reassured that you're not alone. But I will say, like, it's so easy to feel alone because you feel like your thinking is not different. How come, like, you know, you can sit there and you can have everything fine. You have your car to drive. You have your, you know, place to live. You have food on the table. You have a great job. Everything is going well. Everything is on the up and up. And, you know, what they classify as a normal person will, you know, be pretty happy and be fine. And I could have all that going for me. And I could literally want to kill myself. And, you know, people call that crazy and insane. And it's like, you know, you feel like you're just like an alien a lot of times, like living here. Like,
yeah.
What? Like,
Or, well, and then, it, you know, it's like what we said before, and I've lived that, you know, it sounds like you've lived something similar to that too, where it's like, yeah, everything on the outside looks like it's great. I mean, to everybody on the outside, to everybody who's not me, everything is awesome. And I should be, you know, really happy and very cheerful and very just like, you know, like, let's go out, let's do stuff. But then, you know, but then you're like, yeah, but I get that's what it looks like, but I like really just want to go fill up the bathtub and just like, just sleep in the filled bath, you know, or whatever, like just go to sleep for a really long time. Like I just, it's, and no, I can't explain to you why I feel like that because everything around me is telling everybody else that, yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. Everything's on the up and up, but I don't feel like that. And it's because you're not. And I think that a lot of that has to do with that. You know, they say, don't say shoulda, coulda, woulda. Mm-hmm. Well, don't suppose things, you know, don't be like, I'm supposed to feel like this, or you're supposed to feel like this because on the outside, all I'm seeing is, you know, you have an apartment and, you know, everything's great and great, this great job and all this other stuff. Like, don't suppose, like, normal is whatever you decide it is. It's not, don't let somebody say, you shouldn't be sad. Why are you sad? You're supposed to be happy right now.
Respond like, well, why aren't you sad?
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't.
Why aren't you sad? The world kind of sucks anyway. Like, what are you happy about? You're the freaking suspicious one here.
Exactly. You know? Right. Like, have you looked around? It's all about to be on fire. What are you talking about?
And can we just touch on that too? Like, the fact of like 2020 being like the year of like just horrendous like effects for people who have mental health issues, and even people who maybe previously didn't have them and are now developing issues, you know,
because
all of this stuff that's going on. Like, this year has been obviously, you know, like a terrible year. It's become a verb. 2020 has become a verb.
Yeah.
and like, for somebody, like, I just remember working from home, because I you know, work for a company, or I was going into the office every day. And basically, like, there came a point where, you know, things were starting to shut down and everything. And it was like mid-May or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't remember when it was. Something like that.
Yeah. And I remember, like, the CEO of the company that I worked for, he furloughed everyone except for me and, like, one other person in my department.
Oh, wow.
The stress that I felt sick to my stomach every single day, because, like, these were people that I obviously worked with that were on my team that are now furloughed, that are not making any money. And I, for whatever reason, like,
yeah,
working, and I just felt, well, first of all, I felt guilty, because I just struggle with that a lot. Like, I felt guilty. I'm like, you know, oh, like, why me? And then also, mm-hmm, the same thing, I felt like I had to work so hard, because I felt like I had to, like, at least in some, like, make it, you know,
well, make it worth it. Yeah, that feeling of like, well, I'm so lucky that, like, I am one of a few people that caught, you know, that kept my job. So now, mm-hmm, I have to, like, prove myself, like, the, yeah, you kept me for a reason. Like, it was a good choice to keep me, you know, there's that pressure.
And then when we all, like, you know, the CEO, he, like, had us all, like, start working from home, because that was, like, a, you know, they had to figure out how to migrate it.
Yeah.
So we all started working from home. And when I was working from home, I had the same feeling of like, okay, it could all go under in a second. Like, I need to, like, keep working, and I need to, like you said, like, I had the feeling of that, like, I need to prove myself. So I was in my bedroom, like, literally in my bedroom, 18 hours every single day in front of a computer, like, literally just, like, working. Yep. Like, I was in meetings for hours. I was just, like, working, like, just working my life away. And, like, it, in some respect, I think, like, in some respect, I could say, like, it helps me, just because of the fact that, like, if I wasn't doing anything, I probably, it would probably get really bad. But, like, my mind could focus on at least work. But I was literally, mm-hmm, working up to death. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, at the end of the day, like, and I mentioned this on a previous podcast that I had on my channel, but do you watch Rick and Morty?
Yes.
Okay. So do you know that scene, like, where they both go back into, like, the spaceship after having done, like, all these adventures, and then they just start, like, having a breakdown? They start having a breakdown and screaming, like, I don't know if I can do this. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Like, literally, that's how I felt. Like, I was, like, literally.
I felt that a lot, man. I get it.
You know, and I just was, like, toiling away. And it's just this, that, even going through that, and then going through the whiplash of, like, first of all the bad news too. Every time I even bothered to, like, look down at my phone or, like, turn on the news, it's like, here's,
oh, I stopped. I had to stop. I had to, because I was like, I'm gonna go insane if I keep doing this to myself. Like, I know myself well enough to know that I will go down that rabbit, all the different rabbit holes, and I'm just going to get depressed, like, really bad.
And my parents and, you know, my family, whatever, everybody was in a, you know, is in a different state than I am. So when states started shutting down, I was like, I'm going to just be stuck here. I'm you know, going to be by myself. Like, I was just like, I started to have so much anxiety that it was actually insane. And by the way, one of the coping mechanisms that I use with my anxiety is like, okay, look, if you, and this is what I tell myself in my head, if you really seriously feel like you're going to die, you always have the option to, like, get yourself checked out. You can always run to the emergency room. Like, this is not something I do, but it's something that, like, I tell myself that I can do, because it makes me feel better that I have the resources. So I'm like, you won't just call, you know what I mean? And, at that time, I remember feeling so anxious, and I was like, oh my God, like, even if I did need to go to the hospital, I couldn't, because, like, then, you know, they wouldn't even accept me at this
point. Oh,
like, yeah. And it just made my anxiety so much worse. I was like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm just going to die in my bedroom, and, like, nobody will ever know. And, like, I don't know, I just spiraled, and it was so terrible. And everything was depressed. Like every time I even again bothered to look at the news or even social media, it was like crazy. The fact that like what we were looking at was death counts every day. We're literally looking at death counts. Like how morbid and messed up is that? Like here's another death count retweeted. You know, this many people died in this state. Like it was like
It's oh my gosh. Well, that and. Well, you mentioned one of your coping mechanisms was, I do that too, by the way. I tell myself like stuff that it's stuff that I don't necessarily, I kind of have to run through my toolkit. I call it, you know, my bag of tools that I have. Mm-hmm. And I just have to, it's almost like I have to, you know, pick up each tool and like say out loud what it is, like the different things that I can do in this situation. It feels like it gives me a sense of control, like I have more control over the situation. Right. And I don't like feeling out of control because when I'm a control freak, and when I feel out of control, that's when stuff starts to get bad. So I have to like, you know, remind myself of all the little tools that I have. And yeah, when you can't, you know, when you're doing that as a coping mechanism of like running through your bag of tools in your toolkit, that's soothing and comforting for that moment. But the other thing that I found sort of in the long run, because that's more of a short term thing, but like in the long run, it can get incredibly overwhelming. It can get very, very, very overwhelming. Just the thought of like, you know, and that's not healthy either. Just the thought of like, okay, because I'll get super wrapped up in my work and I'll become kind of like a workaholic. And like, mm-hmm. That's what I'll do. That'll be my coping mechanism is I'll just like work to like myself to death, you know? And that's not healthy either, because then I'll get caught up in like, I'm doing all this stuff for the long run, but then I'm not taking myself care of myself in the short run. And then, but then when I feel like I'm taking care of myself in the short term, I'm like not looking at the, so it's a delicate balance, and that's mm-hmm. hard for everybody to find, because it truly is different for everybody to find whatever that balance is. I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, it absolutely does. Are you kidding? Like it definitely makes sense. And it, like you said, you know, we throw ourselves into these things that might seem healthy. By the way, like people, you know, that may be struggling mentally might throw themselves into something that seem healthy. So like maybe if you're on like a certain type of diet, maybe if you're going on runs, maybe if whatever it is that might seem like you're working really hard.
It could literally be anything, working out, you know, just working like at your job, you know, mm-hmm. or like you're just, maybe you're just like going to be super into like your kids or, you know, like what it can literally be. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like alcohol or drugs or, you mm-hmm. know, gambling or something, you know, it doesn't have to be something like that. It can be things that look positive,
but are just hiding, you know, really what's going on. Yeah. You're using it as a coping mechanism and you're not dealing with your real problem. And as soon as that coping mechanism goes away, for whatever reason, maybe you lose your job, maybe you can't work out because you twisted your ankle, maybe your kids
because COVID, things out of your control, to bring it back to that, you know, like because COVID, the gyms are closed, you know, or whatever.
And how, and I can't even like, it makes me like, you know, pivot, because I'm like, oh my God, all of those people who like, you think about the people who maybe were having, they were in an abusive household and like they could get away, you know, or whatever the case may be, and we're unable to do that, and we're like stuck in these situations. Like I was thinking about all those things and seeing that, you know, all these things online and like on the news or whatever. And it's just devastating to me. And I always say, you know, whenever I talk to somebody about this year, I'm like, man, I think 2021, you know, is going to be a year of like residual effects, like the traumas, mm-hmm. even the people, by the way, and I've had friends, you know, I had a friend, for example, that he, like, his dad was fine. He always, like, he's so close to his dad. Like, I, you know, ever since we knew each other, he would always talk about, like, his dad and how, you know, they're just, like, the best of friends. And, like, his dad was perfectly fine 1 week. And then the next week, he came down with COVID. He went into the hospital and they never saw him again. You know, they weren't allowed to visit him. They never saw him again. And this was at the height of everything. So like they couldn't mm-hmm. even go to the funeral. You know, there was no funeral for him. And like people like that who've gone through those situations, you know, I had a friend who like her brother was really depressed, and like, you know, they always would, you know, go and check on him and things like that, and try to, you know, spend time and all these things. And like, because of COVID, you know, he was in his home alone and he ended up killing himself, you know, so they lost him to due to suicide, like things like that, that happened where people died and all these things, and people didn't even get to say goodbye. And I think like the residual effects of this year, which in, by the way, in tandem with, like in parallel with, you know, hearing about things in the, on the news where people are like, this is a hoax. This isn't even real. I'm not going to wear a mask. While you have like a family member, a close friend that just have just died. You know what I mean? Like, trauma and PTSD of this year. I feel like, you know, 2021 will probably have like a lot of residual effects with, in terms of like, you know, the way people have suffered with mental health.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is like, just because COVID is the hot button topic right now doesn't mean that like all that other stuff is just gone away. Like, there's still, you know, cancer. There's still like, there's still people with cancer that are cancer patients. There's still people, you know, with like severe mental illness that need, you know, that, but we're human beings. We need to have contact, like human interaction. And, you know, just from a mental health perspective, I feel like that the fact that we're all sort of supposed to be like locked in our homes, for the foreseeable future, that's not good, you know, for anybody, let alone people who have, you know, mental health issues, which would make you more susceptible to something, you know, like, you know, killing yourself, hurting yourself or somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's anything like that. But like, just because COVID is the hot button topic doesn't mean that, like, you know, all this other stuff has just gone away. Like, the flu's still around. Depression is still around. Like, it, you know, it's like these people are still, the world does keep going. Like, just because COVID is here doesn't mean that, like, all this other stuff is just gone. So we do need to, like, understand that, like, hey, yeah, no, people are still suffering. This is a thing that's going to continue. And it ripples out. It does. It ripples out and has long-term effects.
It has, like, huge long-term effects. Huge. And it's very unfortunate, but it's also very true. Like, I think, you know, another thing that's gone on, which even with me personally, like, I think we have a lot of telehealth now, so like a lot of people are able to see their therapist virtually, but I don't personally subscribe to that. I just don't like, and you see, like, mental health is really delicate, right? So like for me, I don't feel the connection of like doing something, and I never have, like doing something or like, you know, whatever, like with a therapist. I want that feeling of like being able to go into a therapist, sitting down on the couch, like actually being, look at them in the eye, get a feeling for like their aura, like kind of person that
all
they are.
The the energy in the room, like whatever you want to call it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I just, it doesn't do, I don't have the same, like, you know, it doesn't do the same thing for me when it's like, you know, through just it virtually or whatever. And
yeah, no, I totally get that. Like, if it works for you, awesome. It just, it's, I've tried like Talkspace or whatever. Like, I just, it's not for me. I tried it. It's not for me. I need that physical, you know, like you said, I need that physical interaction, that be able to get the read of the room or whatever. I have to be feeling it or whatever, but I can't, cause I can't do any of that. It just feels too, not compartmentalized, but too like isolated, I guess.
Yeah. And so as a result, since COVID, whatever, like I haven't gone to any therapy sessions. I haven't been doing therapy, and I, you know, have friends who, it's the same scenario, like they haven't been going to their therapist or whatever. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that, you know, might not have been even seeing their therapist throughout this whole thing. And that also is another effect, you know, from this whole thing of like being, having to stay home and all this kind of stuff. So it's a big deal. And
or just even the fact that therapy, I'm not gonna lie, therapy is expensive.
It is
expensive. And not just, you know, COVID, like, you know, because we're all locked in our homes, but because the economy is like, I mean, there's the last thing I saw, this could be completely wrong. Please don't quote me on it. It's not my area. I don't really know. But the last thing I saw was that like 40 million people are looking at being evicted in January. Like I said, that could be completely wrong. I don't know if that's the real number. That's just the last thing I remember seeing. But regardless, even if that's true, then a lot of people might not feel exactly like, you know, therapy might be one of the things that gets cut in the monthly budget when, because it can be like $150 for an hour to see a person. Like, it gets expensive, and that's every time you go.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and if you're not feeling like, you know, you have a bunch of money to dole out for you know, therapy is going to get cut in the monthly budget because we have to pay the electric bill, you know, or whatever. Like, so it might not necessarily even be a choice for some people. It can be a, no, I need to not go because I can't, I don't have money to do it.
Absolutely. That's very true, you know, and people have lost their jobs and things like that, and they may not be able to afford it anymore. And even in that respect, like, you know, employers too, like, they've had to deal with a lot and they had to make some tough decisions. And, you know, they may not be shelling out the type of insurance to where, like, your mental health will be covered. But on the flip side, to flip it, you know, to the positive end of things too, to be honest, maybe, you know, I know you were saying earlier, like, I don't want to be that person to say, like, oh, okay, like, I want you to experience what I'm experiencing. You can understand. No, I don't want that either. But sometimes you almost wish, you know, people to understand. But on the positive side, I think that for some people, and probably for a decent amount of people, they may have a better understanding of what it feels like to have mental health, because now they have experienced things that are, you know, tragic, and not only tragic, but like, even just like you said, staying alone and staying locked in your house. First of all, like, that feeling that you feel when you're quarantined and you feel almost trapped and you have to stay in your house and you know, you start spiraling. That's people, even though we're walking around, we feel locked in our heads. We feel quarantined in our mind. It's like our mind is the house where we have to stay in, and we, you know, it's there's water and we can't leave. Like, that's how that feels. And I think that, you know, people now have a good sense of what that feels like. You know, you're locked in.
Right. I mean, that's just, that's maybe some people will get it now. I hope so. I hope so. I really do. I hope so. I think that would, you know, and I, and then I also do think that, like, you know, also bringing it forward in some, you know, on more public platforms, you know, like podcasts or like long form, you know, to talk about it, and to talk about it pretty honestly, I think that helps too, because the more awareness that we can be like, no, like, Hollywood got it wrong. Like, it's not really, like, romantic. It's not romantic to feel this way. It's not cute. It's not sexy. It's not pretty. Like, you know, to feel sad all the time. It's not great is what it is. Like, you know, and we can, even in a small way, I don't know, maybe bring some light to what it's really like and be like, hey, you know, pay attention, because I don't know, men talk about their, you know, they couldn't get hard all the time, and now, you know, they fix that. So if we, maybe if we talk about depression enough, people be like, fine, we'll fix it, like, or we'll do stuff about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Make it a norm. Make it something that you don't have to feel ashamed about. Same way you can come in, like I said, keep giving this example, you know, broken arm, broken leg. You can come in and people care and people ask, you know, what happened and, you know, whatever, like, they check on you and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you need help. Like, it's the same thing for depression. Check on your friends, you know, check on your neighbors and have some compassion for them. Even if you can't necessarily fully understand because you haven't experienced it, have some compassion. You know, if you find that you don't really understand it, you know, do some research. There's plenty of literature out there on it. You know, a quick Google search will tell you. There's YouTube videos. There are podcasts. You know, there are things that you can use to learn about it if that's what you'd like to do. But don't just make these kind of broad statements, you know.
Yeah. Paint it with a broad stroke of like, you know, to go back to, it's not, you're being so bipolar today. Don't. Probably not the best choice of words. I wouldn't, it's not like that. Or, you know, like, just don't be sad. Just choose not to be sad. It's not that easy, you know, like, so yeah, there are things that, there are resources out there, I guess. And hopefully, you know, people will use them.
You know, hopefully, I think it's, it's like you said, I think it's very important that people talk about it. And I know that it's a hard thing to talk about, especially when you're suffering with it. Like, it's something that's extremely hard to talk about. Sometimes, like, sometimes it's easy, and sometimes I find that it's like really hard, because I think every time I say something, I'm like, I don't think anybody's gonna get it. Like, I don't think anybody's gonna understand.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably say that multiple times in my podcast. I talk about things. I'm like, you might not understand this. You know what I mean? Because
it's hard to understand that
anybody does. But again, still very important to just even talk about it and say something about it, because it could help, you know, a couple people maybe open up their minds a little more and understand a little bit better. So I fully agree.
Yeah, I say it all the time. You know, I could be wrong. And I don't know if what I just said made any sense. I say both of those things a lot.
Yeah.
So tell us, just to go first, thank you for coming on and talking. Oh, wow. For almost 2 hours, about this. It's, oh my gosh, it was so fun. I really loved talking to you. This is great. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to have you back if you'd be willing to come back.
Of course. Anytime.
But go ahead and tell us, like, what you're doing next, what's coming up for you. And then, like, you know, where people can find you, all your stuff.
Okay. So I actually have a podcast episode that should be released on Monday of next week. So you can find that. And it'll have a special guest on there. So we'll be talking about music and how it relates to things like depression, stress, anxiety. So that should be a good one to stay tuned on. And then you can find me, Stressed, Depressed, and Anxious is the name of my podcast. You can find me on Twitter, SD_anxious, and on Instagram at SDAnxious. And definitely, you know, give me a follow and let me know what you think. I appreciate any feedback. And thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, hold on. I'm going to stop recording real quick. I don't know why I did it like that. Okay, sorry. So, and then go ahead and just plug anything else, if you have merch or anything, or anything like
no
that.
Merch, but that might be coming soon. I'm thinking about starting a Patreon, so be on the lookout for that. You can definitely find more information about that if and when I do it on Twitter. So again, you can find me on Twitter at SD_anxious. And then you can find me on any podcast platforms that you use. So that could be Spotify, Anchor, Apple, whatever it is. You can just go on Twitter and find me on any of those platforms.
Okay, awesome. Again, thank you so much. I'm sorry, I don't know what I was doing over there with the recording thing. As usual, weirdos, be kind and stay weird. But thank you for coming and talking to us. I really enjoyed it, and we'll definitely have to have you back. So
much. And I'd love to have you on my podcast as well. Maybe we can talk about that offline, but you're amazing. It's been a great honor to be here with you and having this discussion. And I loved every second. Thank you so
much. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. That's so nice.
Of course.